Okay, we're going to start here on the top of Mem Zayin Amud Aleph. We left off yesterday with the Gemara explaining that the reason that Rabbi Shimon doesn't allow you to carry a lamp that is lit is because, as I said, basis the devar asur, becomes a base for something that is asur, and that becomes problematic. So the Gemara is now going to discuss a little bit about the concept of basis the devar asur. Amar Rabbi Zera, Amar Rabbi Asi, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, Amar Rabbi Chanina, Amar Rabbi Romanus. Li hetir Rabbi, the taltel machta be'fra. Rabbi allowed me to take a pan with its ashes in it. So this is going to somewhat present the problem to us based on what we think here in the Hava Mino. Jazeera have a machta, which is a pan, which seems to be okay to carry. Inside of it is afer, ashes, which would be considered to be mukse. So now I have the pan being a basis, l'davar asur, but I'm allowed to carry it, which would be the opposite conclusion of what we just suggested in the position of Rabbi Shimon. Samar Rabbi Zeira, the Rabbi Asi, mi amar Rabbi Yochanan Hachi. Did Rabbi Yochanan really suggest that? Vatnan. Don't we have a Mishnah? Notel Adam bino, va'evin biyado. Person can carry their child if there's a stone in the hand. O kalkala, or a basket, va'evin bitocha. And if there's a stone inside the basket, one can carry them. Ve'amar Rabba Barachanam Rabbi Yochanan. This is the important qualification of that Mishnah, which is Bekalkalam Leah Perot Askinan. That only if it has fruits in there. Meaning that if you just had a basket and a stone in it, you would not be permitted to carry the basket because that is a basis ledavar ha'asur. You wouldn't be able to carry a stone. A stone is mukse. So you need something else to be matir over here. What's the something else? That's what Rabbi Yochanan suggests over here, that the basket also has fruits in it. So you have a basket full of fruits and a stone, which is what we call a basis ledavar asur umutar. It's a base for something that's both asur, which is the mukse, the stone, and mutar, which is the peirot. But taimudit peperet. The only reason it works over here is because there are peirot, there are fruits inside of the basket. Ha'leitle peirot. If there were not fruits inside the basket, it would not work. So ishtomeim kishach ado. He was silent for a moment. He had to think about it. V'amar, hachanami, our case also, di'it ba kartin. Our case also has heter here. The pan that they were talking about, or the pans that they're speaking about here, were used to burn incense, used to bring a pleasant smell, either after the meal or in the house. So kartin is a terminology that's used in menachot for incense or for the levona that goes along with it. And so karatin are little pieces, granules of livona. So the pan in it now has the ashes, but also has this livona in it. Livona being the heter, the ashes being the isur. So Amar Abaye, karatin, be Rebbe, mi chashive. Wait a minute. We're talking about in Rebbe's house. Rebbe's an extremely wealthy individual. These little granules of livona that are left over, are they considered to be significant for them? Are they significant enough to say now that this pan has both heter and isur in it? You say, okay, you're right. In Rebbe's house, they're not so important. But for a poor person, they would be significant. In Va'atanya, we have a breita. Big day aniyim le'aniyim, big day ashirim le'ashirim. And when it comes to tumat bigadim, we've mentioned this before. Tosafot over here says it's only with regards to midras, tumat midras, which is sitting on or laying on the item, that the size of beged that qualifies to mekabel tumah, we saw two sizes. One was shlosha al shlosha tvachim, 3x3 tvachim. We also saw shalosh al shalosh etzbaot, 3x3 etzbaot. The Gemara there says, what is 3x3 etzbaot ra'ui for? We said it's good to be a patch for the clothes of aniim. But that's only true of an ani. There, the Braita distinguishes between for a nashir, the minimum size of clothing that would be mekabel tumah is 3x3 tefachim, which is considered significant in and of itself, and therefore it would be equally significant for an ani or an ashir. But below that amount, an ashir would never keep. An ani would keep it. So therefore there is a certain amount of subjectivity to the size of beged that will be mekabel tumat midras. For an ashir, the minimum threshold is 3x3 tefachim. For an ani, the minimum threshold is 3x3 etzbaot, because he would save a piece of cloth that small in order to use as a patch. Avodanim le'ashirim lo. But what does not true is that if it's significant for ani, for the ashir, that doesn't make a difference. So for the ashir, the 3x3 etzbaot is not relevant. It's not significant. And so the same thing over here. When you're talking about something that's a basis le'davar asur v'mutar, the heter here has to be something that's significant to the individual who it's relevant to. Over here, it's Beit Rebbe. It has to be relevant to them that these leftover granules of Levona are significant. Ela Amar Abaye Midahava Agirif Shorei. So Abaye suggests that the halacha here is totally different. He's almost like jumping ship here. It's not an issue in terms of Bosis Ludavas or Bosis Ludavar Mutar. It's invoking a different principle, which is Gerif Shorei. Gerif Shorei in the literal translation is like a chamber pot. It's basically something that was used whether to defecate, urinate in, and it's unpleasant to keep inside the house. One would want to remove it from the house in order to continue to reside there and feel comfortable residing there. In the broader sense, it's basically garbage. Garbage that makes it unpleasant or makes it that you're unable to live in the place. And there's a permission on Shabbat that even though these items technically are mukseh, they have no purpose on Shabbat, there's no reason that you should be able to carry them. There's nevertheless a dispensation that if it ruins the atmosphere of the house, one can remove them from the house. So that's a Gerif Shorei. So now what Abaye is suggesting is this pan full of ashes is the equivalent of a Gerif Shorei. It's garbage that has to be disposed of. It has to be removed. So the reason you're allowed to move the ashes here has nothing to do with whether the ashes are Isur, or if there's het there, or anything to do with that, of the Muksa case, simply under this special dispensation of Gerav Shorei. So Amar Rova, Rova says, Shtei Shuvot B'davar. That answer does not work, and I have two reasons why it shouldn't work. Kada, the Gerav Shorei Mois, V'haylo Mois. The definition of a Gerav Shorei is it has to be something that is disgusting, something that is so unpleasant that you find it's a necessity to remove it from the house. If it's something that doesn't compel you to remove it from the house, that's not called a Gerav Shorei. Ashes in general do not have that effect. Saying garbage, a chamber pot, that has an effect on an individual where you say, I don't want to be here when this is here, or I can't stay in this room with it, so you want to remove it. Ashes don't have that effect, especially in their day where ashes were very common. That wouldn't have the effect of having someone feel ma'us, and that they'd want to remove it right away. It's not clear that Abaye accepts that there are karatin shalavona in anymore. He's going back, he's just saying that it's afer and what the problem with the afer is. But even if you said they are in there, according to Rebbe, they're insignificant, so they're batel to gabe the ashes. Abaye is really focused on the ashes aspect of it. Vote, gerev shorei migle, v'amichse. The general problem with the gerev shorei is that it's open, it's exposed. And being open or exposed, that's what causes the problem for the individual to be there and why you're compelled to remove it. Over here, the way they had their incense pans is that you had the pan, and on top you had a lid that was hinged or opened up, and when you closed that lid, it had little holes in it that allowed the incense to rise from the pan. But you have a covered pan. A covered pan means that the ashes are not really exposed, and therefore it makes it less likely to be called a Gerav Shorei or something that would compel you to remove it from the house. Elo Amar Rava. Rava offers up an alternative, which is Ki Avina Bei Rav Nachman. Hava mitaltalina an kinuna agav kitma. When we were in the house of Rav Nachman, we used to carry a brazier agav kitma because of its ashes. So Rashi explains again what a kinuna is. It's a kli nechoshet, copper brass pan, shemivin boa ur lifnei sarim litchamem, in which they bring the fire or probably the coals before those important people in order to heat up. So it's a heating pan. We've seen these before, a long-handled heating pan. Now once it's burnt out and there are ashes in it, the heating pan itself is muktzah because it's only used for isur. Now, what he's done, or what Rava has accomplished here, is changed ashes from being muktzah to being actually the thing that is matir. Because ashes have a use, or utility, on Shabbat, assuming that they weren't created on Shabbat. Assuming they were ashes prior to Shabbat, those ashes now become heter on Shabbat, because the ashes have a use, or a utilization on Shabbat. So Rashi points out, she'etzrichim le'efro l'chasot rok otzoa. They use it as some sort of dilutive material, so that they use it to cover over, whether it was feces, spit, anything that was disgusting in the house, they use the afer to cover it over, or to dilute that item. This afer now, instead of being the problem of isur, it's actually the item that is matir you to carry, because the ashes are the heter. Until now, we assumed that the afer was not mukhan, that it was not ready to, or utilized on Shabbat, and therefore it's the muksa that's causing us the problem. Now what we've done, or what Rava has accomplished, is said, no, the afer was already there before Shabbat. And the afer is the heter. And that's why you're allowed to carry, over here, the kinuna, and above, pan that Rabbi Romanus was carrying around, the machta, that was also because of the ashes that were in it. The ashes are heter. So now you have a basis ledavar ha-mutar. And therefore, even though the pan itself, or the brazier itself, you would not carry alone, because it has heter in it, now you're allowed to carry that item because you're using it as a vehicle to move that which is heter. And so now we flipped the whole case around and said the ashes are now the vehicle for heter, not the vehicle for isur. Vafagav, now he puts in a little spin here, vafagav deikalea shivrei etzim. Not only are the ashes matir the kinun, the brazier, which is the klishim lachtol the isur, but because of the ashes you're allowed to carry it, but even if there are small pieces of wood on top of it, the wood is clearly isur, because the small pieces of wood are going to be used to light the fire, and are muksa. So now when you have muksa and you have heter together, now you have what's called a basis ledavar asur mutar, or kli that is makzik, isur and heter, and we allow you then to carry it. So that's the principle that's being established here. Meitave, is that really true? We have a brayta that says, v'shavim, shem yesh ba shivrei petila, she'asur letaltel. Everybody agrees, if there are leftover pieces of wick in there, that you may not carry it. So now we have, the wicks are clearly isur or muksa. They're mixed together with the ashes that are inside. The ashes are het there. The wicks are isur. And here we say that you can't carry it. How come over here, when you have the wicks and the ashes, we say no? And you, Rav, are trying to suggest that when you have ashes and wood, pieces of wood, that it's fine to carry it. So Amar Abaye, Beglila Shonu. This happens to be in the Galil. Rashi over here says what's important about the Galil. Rashi says, Shein bigadim shel pishtan mutzu'im lahem. They don't have linen clothing, or they don't have linen material up there, and therefore they were short on wicks. They didn't have a lot of wicks, and wicks were extremely important to them. So the significance of wicks is what's important over here. That's the way Rashi translates it over here. Rashi on Daf Ayin Chet, later on the Masechta, says, Galila Shanu, is that they aniyim hayu. They were very poor up there. Since they were poor, the wicks do not gone adding significance. Just like before we say, like a beged, that shalosh shalosh be'etz ba'ot, over here the wicks take on adding significance. Tosafot does not like either of those interpretations. And the Rabbeinu Tam says, Galila Shanu, she'elahem, rov shemen. That they had tons of oil up there. V'lachi lo batle shivrei p'tila agav shemen. Normally, when you looked at two items, you would say, look, I have oil and I have a little bit of leftover wicks. The oil would be the most significant material there, and therefore you'd focus on what the status of the oil was. But because in the Galil they had a plethora of oil, therefore oil was not significant to them. What was significant to them was the wicks, because they had much more oil than they had in terms of wicks. And that imbalance caused them to make or put significance on the wicks, not on the oil.
Concept of basis, the mutter stands confirmed in that realm.
So very good. What you're raising is an issue that's raised by the Rishonim in the Gemara and Beitza. The question with regards to basis davar asur and mutar is, it's simply enough to have isur and heter on an item, and that makes it a basis davar asur mutar. Without any bittul, without any consideration of the items that are along there, as long as there's heter and isur, that's enough to create a basis davar asur umutar. Or, do we have to look at contextually, for instance, the value of the heter and the isur? Do we have to give, in terms of looking at these items, some sort of subjective value to the items that are found here? This Gemara seems to suggest that it's not only simply isur and heter, but the significance of the items that are there also play a role in whether it's classified as a basis ledavar asur or mutar. So if you have heter and isur together, but the isur is so significant that it's as if the heter is batel, the gabe, the isur, then we would not consider the heter. Just because it's heter, it's not significant enough, or it's not meaningful. And the same way the other way around. If you have isur there that is so significant, then the heter will be batel, the gabe, the isur, and it's as if it's not there. The Rashba makes such a comment at the beginning of Beitza. The Rashba says that when it comes to basis ledavar asur mutar, there has to be some sort of relative value between the isur and heter. This comes up, for instance, on Shabbat. Sometimes people want to put the candles on the table, and they put them on a tray on the table, but they want to be able to move the candles off the table later on Shabbat. But you can't move the candles are davar isur. So they have a tray underneath that becomes a basis ledavar asur. So what do? They put heter onto the tray. They put a piece of bread onto the tray. Problem possibly with that is, now you have silver candlesticks and a little piece of bread on the platter. When you have those two together, is that still really a basis ledavar asur or a mutar? Or is what really matters the candlesticks, and the bread is insignificant in relationship to the candlesticks? Can you call it a basis ledavar asur or a mutar? So there are those, according to like the Rishonim and like the Rashba, who say, no, that's not a basis ledavar asur or a mutar, because you have a disparate value here between the candlesticks and the bread. There are others that will argue that the Gabei Shabbat, you give oversized or exaggerate the significance of the bread because for you, that's what's relevant on Shabbat. That's heter to you on Shabbat. That heter is enough to create the buses, the davar asur, the davar mutar here and allows you to carry it. So that's the question that you have to address and partly what you're asking here in terms of the bitul. This Gemara, like with Rabbi, seems to indicate that that is true. Where you had the Levona over there, close to Rabbi, it was insignificant. Therefore, it did not become a basis, the davar asur mutar. Now, you could argue against the way that I'm suggesting here, that in our cases over here, it's not about a value question, it's a question of bitul over here. And the overarching theme in this Gemara is bitul, which is that they are so insignificant, or they're not relevant in these cases, and that's why the isur, the heter, disappears, because of their relevance, not because of their relative value. Had it been that either one of them was significant, had there been enough labona there, even though to Rabbi it would have been insignificant compared to something else, nevertheless, that might have been sufficient. It was just such an insignificant amount that we say it's batel. So you could argue against the conclusion that I'm bringing, but it is a question within the muksa of basis, ledavar asur mutar, what exactly is the qualification of the isser and heter that has to be on there in order to qualify it to be called a basis, ledavar asur mutar, not just simply a basis, ledavar asur. All right, that was just a quick view of Basis Davar Asur Mutar. We'll bump into it again. Also, the Gemara in the beginning of Beitza will address it again. But just so you know what the issues are, the Gemara raised it a little bit here, but these are issues that have practical ramifications today in terms of Basis Davar Asur Mutar, in terms of moving things on Shabbat. So now the Gemara moves on. Levi bar Shmuel Ashkechino de Rabbi Avo, the Ravuna bar Chia, da bekamei pitcha de Bei Ravuna. Levi found these two chachamim at the entranceway to the base medrash of Ravuna. Amar lo, ma'olach zir mitash shel tarsiim b'shabbat. Or is one allowed to reassemble a bed of tarsiim on Shabbat? Rashi says that the mita tarsiim is basically a travel bed. The equivalent of a travel bed. It was used either, Rashi here says, torfei nechoshet. It's either used by coppersmiths or gardiim or the weavers. They used to travel from city to city. They're iterant merchants. And therefore, they take with them a bed that dismantles and then can be reassembled. Right, a cot, something along those lines. But are you allowed to reassemble such a thing on Shabbat? Amalei Shafer Dami, no problem, you can reassemble it. Ata lekameh de Rav Yehuda. And he went to then speak to Rav Yehuda about this. Amar, have Rav Shmuel da Amrei Tarvayu. Rav and Shmuel both say, remember, Rav Yehuda is a Talmud of Rav, and then later on is a Talmud of Shmuel. So Rav Yehuda knows well what Rav and Shmuel are saying, and here he says, both Rav and Shmuel agree. You reassemble a bed like this on Shabbat, you're chayav chatat. Osur mide oraita. So now you have a huge gap between these two positions. You have a position here, Rav and Shmuel says it's osur mide oraita, put it together. And then you have Rabbi Avo and Rav Huna Bar Chiya saying that it's mutar, even midrabanan. It's completely mutar. Put together this bed. So meitevei, so let's try to understand this. We have a Tosefta that says, a machzir, k'nemino Rabbi Shabbat, chayav chatat. Someone who reassembles a candelabra on Shabbat, whether it's a branch of the candelabra, or whether it's a central piece that has branches coming off of it, if you put it back together, then you're chayav chatat. That's osur mide oraita. Kane saidin lo yachzir. One should not return it. Be miyachzir patur aval asur, which would mean it's an isur derabanan, not an isur deraita. Kane saidin. The easiest way to explain this is like a window washer's squeegee. The window washer has on the squeegee extension bars that he puts together. He needs it to be longer, so he puts on the extensions. He needs it to be shorter, he takes off the extensions. Over here, it's talking about someone who is a sayad, the whitewashing. The painter, right, the painter, the whitewashing, has these extension, or the telescopic arms, whatever it is that you're doing here. The difference between them being, that by the menorah, by the candelabra, once you put it on, it's going to be there for a long time. It's not something that's on a regular basis taken off and put on. It's something that when you affix it there, it's going to stay there for a duration. On the other hand, when it comes to this paintbrush, this roller, this squeegee, that has the extension arm on it, on a regular basis, you're going to connect and disconnect them because depending where you are on the wall or how far you need to reach, it's going to be taken apart and put together on a regular basis. So that's not considered to be a permanent or a connection or building over here. So therefore, it's only osur midrabanan, not osur midoraita. Rabbi Simai Omer, he adds in, keren agula chayav, keren pshuta patur. These are musical instruments. There's some sort of flutes. So if it's a circular flute, which required more of a musician or an expert to put together, if that is put together, then you're chayav chatat. Because that's something, once it's put together, it's not taken apart. On the other hand, when we're talking about a kerem pshuta, which is a simple flute, whether it's putting in the reed or putting it together, whatever it is that you're doing here, on a regular basis, a layperson could put it together, take it apart, it's done on a regular basis, therefore you're patur levalasur. Rashi says over here, what exactly are you chayav chatat for? What isur d'oraita did you violate over here? So what are you going to say to me? Binyan, building. We know, and we discussed this already, that Beit Hillel believes ein binyan b'kelim. There's no din of binyan by kelim. There is binyan by structures, there's no binyan by kelim. So that cannot be the reason that you are chayav a chatat over here. So what is the chayav chatat generated by over here? So Rashi says that when you put it together, it's hutchilato v'gmaro, dimsau sekeli. That when you put on this item, that is both the beginning and the end of the process, which is what we call chayav mishum makeh v'patish. It's the melacha, which is the last of the melachot mentioned in the Mishnah, which is the finishing of any item, the finishing touch on any item. If that is the completion, or brings it into function, that's called makeh v'patish, and therefore you're chayav chatat for the violation of makeh v'patish. Makeh v'patish in the Mishnah is one of two definitions that's given to it. It's either the last blow that is given by the smith or the craftsman to finish off, and that last blow, that's called the gamar, the makeh v'patish. The other definition that's given to it is the worker or the craftsman, the smith, when he's using a hammer to work on the material that he's working on, the hammer has to be absolutely smooth or flat. And therefore, before he hits the material, he has to hit it on something else to ensure that the hammer is flat so that it doesn't do damage to the material. So he takes one hit, like on the anvil, and then one hit on the metal. So that hit to the anvil is what's considered the makeh v'patish because that ensures that the hammer is ready to do the work. Again, it's the finishing touch for the hammer to make sure that the next hit it does is on the material will be a successful hit, or lamein yadav, to make sure that he hits properly. But it's some sort of form of completion, or the last thing you do before. And so over here, this is the completion of these kelim, and that's why it'll be considered to be makeh v'patish. So now we have a problem. We have a machloket here about this bed of the tarsim. We brought a tosefta that discusses, at least, if it's something that's left in a permanent state, then it's chayav chatat. If it's something that is done on a temporary basis, then at least it's also midrabanan. So neither of the options are available to say that's mutar, like was suggested by Rabbi Abba and Rabbuna Barchia. So how are we going to deal with this? How are we going to deal with their position? So the Gemara says, Inu amar ki hai tana. They subscribe to the position of this tana. The tanya, Belabnota mita, vikarota mita, ulubachim shel skivas. Belabnota mita are the equivalent of today what we call cups. You have a bed that's going to sit on carpet or on wood and you don't want it to scratch the floor. You don't want it to sink into the carpet. Place under the legs of the bed, you put cups underneath it to support the legs. That's what these miblabnota mita are. They're the equivalent of small feet, small pieces at the bottom that hold the legs of the bed. In their day, the problem was that moisture on the ground would eat away at the wood that were the legs of the bed. So they need some sort of protection or intervening matter that would stop the legs from being on the ground. Then you have karota mita, which are the legs of the bed itself. Ulevachim shelskivas is a very interesting thing. Rashi describes it. Eitz katan kamin dav shetokim b'keshet. It's used on the bow and arrow that Allah moshech ha-chetz, on which you pull that arrow. So it's basically the guide on the bow and arrow. It's the guide that on which you place the arrow when you're pulling it back. So that's what this little piece of wood is. Lo yechzir. All these items, one may not replace, reconstruct on Shabbat. But if you do replace them on Shabbat, then you are patur aval asur, meaning that there's an isur d'rabanan. Velo itka. And you should not put them in or fix them with strength. Now, when you fix them with the strength means that you are jamming them in place, because when you do that, you're assuming that you're not going to take them apart. Right, it's going to be much longer duration, it's much more permanent in nature. Then mim taka chayav chatat. And if you do that, then you're going to be chayav chatat. If it's loose, mutar the gamre. That's totally mutar. If it's loose, it's totally fine. So now, what Rabbi Avo and Rav Huna Bechi are going to say, we subscribe to the position of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That as long as the attachment or the affixing of these items leaves it in a state where it's still loose, and it's not jammed in place, not locked in place, then that type of assembly is not problematic on Shabbat. So anything where the assembly leaves in a state that is loose or a state that is not permanently affixed, that is mutar on Shabbat, and that's what they were suggesting. This bed of the Tarsiim, the assembly leaves it in a loose way, obviously, because they're going to take it apart again, and he's going to travel again with it. So that type of assembly is mutar legamrei on Shabbat. Now Tosafot still asks over here, the Gemara in other places in Shabbat says it's not comfortable having two positions like this. Gemara is never comfortable having a position that one says mutar, and one says chayav chatat. Whenever we have a machloket, the assumption of the Gemara is that they're going to be one standard deviation away from each other. Which is that, if I say mutar, then the one who says asur is only going to say asur derabanan. If I say asur derabanan, the other person is going to say asur deraita. We're not going to have two standard deviations where one is saying asur deraita, and one is saying mutar legamre. So that's where Tosafot says, I don't understand here. Now I have a machloket here. When Rav and Shmuel are saying asur deraita, and Rabbi Abba and Rabbuna Bar Chiya subscribing to Shimon Gamliel saying mutar legamre, says that's a spread that I'm not comfortable with. How do you have such a differential in opinions? So what Tosafot says is, rewords it a little bit. It says, v'yesh lamar da'achi kamar le'el. Ha'ad Rav Shmuel d'amei tevayu ha'magzir mitah shel tarsiim b'shabbat chayav chatat, k'she'inu rafui. That's only when it's not loose. When they lock it in place, that's chayav chatat. Therefore, when it's loose, osur midrabanan. So Tosafot takes it down, moves the machloket to one standard deviation by saying, Rav and Shmuel and Rav Huna Bar Chiya and Rabbi Abba were talking about two different cases. One time that when you lock it in place, like we saw in this braita that we just quoted, when you lock it in or you make it tight, that's chayav chatat. That's what Rav and Shmuel were addressing. Rabbi Abba and Rav Huna Bar Chiya were addressing a case where it's loose. They're apples and oranges. But if you went to apples and apples, their machlok would be between an isur derabanan and mutar legamrei. And that way, Tosafot limits the machloket to the distance in their machloket. Rav Chama av amita galalnita. In as Rav Chama, they had this bed of the galalnita. It's not clear what exactly this galalnita is. Rashi brings over here, mita galalnita, hu ke'en shel tarsiim. Similar to the bed of the tarsiim that we saw before. Later on in the Masechta on Kuf Lamed Chet, Rashi over there says about the kise galin. That's equivalent to our bed of galalnita over here, which is basically, it's something that disassembles and assembles. So it's again, that's something that is not a permanent fixture, but something that is taken apart and put together. So have a hadre la biyomatova. They were putting it back together on Yom Tov. Why are you putting it together? They're assembling it. Binyamin Etzadu. So he says, what? This is not the normal way of putting it together. So it's an unusual type of binyan. Therefore, you think it's mutar. It says, Nihi, deusur doraita, lakisur derabanan, mihaika. Okay, because it's Binyamin Etzad, or it's not the normal way to put it together, because you're not putting it in tightly, you're not locking it in place. So there's no din doraita. But there's still a isur derabanan to assemble in that way. Amarle, ano, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel sphirli. I hold like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. That he's saying the same thing that Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Huna Bar Chiya says, but it's mutar. You're assuming that the problem here, once you do it, not in the way that it's a chiyuv d'oraita, then I land in an itzur d'rabanan. I subscribe to Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's position that it's mutar legamrei when there is no chiyuv d'oraita involved. Alright, next Mishnah. Dot nim li tachad aner lekabel nitzotzot. So we actually quoted this Mishnah earlier in the Perek, which is that one is allowed to put a utensil to capture the sparks that come out of the lamp. You cannot put water into this item because then it's not only catching the sparks, but it's also extinguishing the sparks. Mari asks the question, if you remember before, Rav Chista had made a statement. Rav Chista makes a statement that one may not put a kli down to capture an egg that is being laid, but one may take a kli to cover an egg that was already laid. There you had Rabba and Rav Yosef trying to explain why or what the reason is behind Rav Chista's position. Rabba suggested it was Hatzala Mitzuya. Rav Yosef suggested that it was an issue of Mavatel Kli Meheichano. The Gemara asked this question. That's why we had this quoted before. The Gemara quoted this Mishnah and said, wait a minute, you can be Mavatel Kli Meheichano because look here, you're allowed to put a utensil down to capture the sparks. That's what the Gemara basically asks us here. How can you put the kli down to capture the sparks? That's mevata kli me'echano. Because once the muksa gets in it, kli can no longer be moved. And again, we saw before that Rashi said it's either binyan or soter, because the kli now is affixed in place, so it's lost its utility. Gemara answers like it answered before, which is, Amar Rav Huna b'Rei d'Rabbi Shua nitzotzot ein b'hem mamash. Sparks are intangible. They're intangible items, and therefore they do not qualify to be muksa to ruin the kli. You can move the kli afterwards because the sparks don't really exist. They're there to protect against something else, but they themselves don't have a status of muksa that they can affect the kli. Now, the harder part of this Mishnah is, V'lo yitein l'tocho mayim p'nei shu mechabe. Now that I put water in it because it extinguishes the sparks. Lema tznan stama k'Rabbi Yossi. Let us say our Mishnah is a stam Mishnah, supports the position of Rabbi Yossi. Damar, gorem l'kibui asur, that if you cause extinguishment on Shabbat, that is problematic. This relates to a Gemara later on in the Masechta. But on the Masechta, the Gemara discusses what happens if a fire comes on Shabbat. What are you allowed to do in order to stop the fire on Shabbat? The Rabbanan over there have a suggestion that you make what's called a wall of water. You basically take a large number of barrels filled with water, and you make a wall out of those barrels. So what ends up happening is when the fire gets there, it'll eventually cause the barrels to burn down, explode, and that water will then extinguish the fire. That's what we call gram kibui. You're not extinguishing the fire directly. You're causing it to be extinguished, but it's derech grama. So there the Chachamim say gram kibui is mutar. Rabbi Yossi takes the alternative position, which is gram kibui is asur. And because gram kibui is asur, he does not allow you to do this. So let's suggest that Rabbi Yossi is the author of our Mishnah. Over here, are you extinguishing the nitzotzot? No, you're not putting out the sparks. You're simply causing it that when the sparks come, they will be extinguished. So that would be the equivalent of gram kibui over here. So what the Gemara suggests is, let Rabbi Yossi be the author of our Mishnah that a goyim the kibui is asur. Gemara says, v'tisbro, does that really make sense? Imo d'amar Rabbi Yossi b'Shabbat. Rabbi Yossi only restricts one from doing gram kibui on Shabbat itself. Be'erev Shabbat mi'amar. If you were to put the water here on Erev Shabbat, according to Biosi, you would have no problem. Gram kibui is only a problem on Shabbat itself, because kibui is a melacha. We won't allow you to do the grama, causing of that melacha on Shabbat. But if you do it before Shabbat, melacha is not a sur. So obviously, gram kibui before Shabbat is also not a sur. V'chitei ma'achanami b'Shabbat. So what are you going to say? Our Mishnah is talking about a case on Shabbat. V'atanya. We have a braita that expands on the Mishnah and tells us that our Mishnah is not only relevant on Shabbat, is also relevant on Erev Shabbat, which is, notnim kli tachat haner lekabel nitzotzot b'Shabbat. When it's allowed to put the utensil there to catch the sparks on Shabbat itself, then it's aruch lamar b'Erev Shabbat. Obviously, if you can put it on Shabbat, you certainly can put it on Erev Shabbat. V'lo yitein l'tocho mayim mipnei shu mechabeh me'erev Shabbat. Even before Shabbat, one may not put a bowl full of water to catch the sparks. V'ein aruch lamar b'Shabbat. And certainly you can't do it on Shabbat. If you can't do it Erev Shabbat, you certainly can't do it on Shabbat. Now, that precludes us from saying that the author of this Mishnah is Rabbi Yossi, because it's clearly not the issue. Gram kibui can't be the issue over here, because if gram kibui is the issue, then why is it restricted even on Erev Shabbat? Elam Rabashi, afilu teimer Rabbonon, even Rabbonon could be the authors of our Mishnah. Sh'ayni ocha mishnei mikarev et kibuyav. The Gemara here draws a distinction and says that the Mishnah could even be authored by the Rabbanan, that our case is not similar to gram kibui. Gram kibui is one case, and that's where we have Machloket Rabbanan and Rabbi Yossi. Our case is a case of mikarev et kibuyav. What's that distinction? What's the difference? So Rashi says, delo domi, the gram kibui, the hotam kimate deleka lekelim, delekahu depakalohu vigramo ba'almahu. When it comes over there in the case, later on in the Masechta, in Perakol Kidvei, over there it says, how is the extinguishment accomplished? It's that the fire takes under the barrels, then it destroys the barrels, which will freeze the water to extinguish the fire. That's grama. Over here, the water itself is right there. It doesn't have to do anything in terms of getting connection to the water. And that's what Rashi says, Shemekarevet kibuav zimin kibui lehedja. You put the item that's going to extinguish it there openly. V'havalei mechabe mamash. It's the equivalent of extinguishing, literally extinguishing on Shabbat. One is that what creates accessibility to the water is the fire itself. You don't give accessibility to the water. Over here, in our case, the accessibility of the water is provided by you. So, mikarev kibuyav is that you now have put the item that will extinguish it, you've made it now available. Even on Erev Shabbat, that's because you're atu. But gram kibuy is when you do not provide the accessibility to the water. Another action has to be taken before that happens. Tosafot right away says, and asks someone what Svi's asking here is, can you just refine the definition between these two? Tosafot over here says, it's not really kibui mamash. You put that platter down with the water, that's not really kibui. Come on. You put the water there, you haven't done kibui. The sparks still have to come out, and they still have to land in the water, that's not called kibui. So Tosafot says over here, first of all, Gazrina and Erev Shabbat atu Shabbat, but then he says, Ubshabad yachol avoli day kibui. Yachol avoli day kibui. Im yagbia kli b'shat nefilat anitzotzot. If you lift up the kli while the spark's coming out, then you've actually done kibui. Because then you'd be what's called mikarev et kibuyav. To simply put the bowl down there with the water, That's not bringing closer the kibbutz. That's simply putting it there, and then the spark comes out, fine. If you put the bowl there when the spark's coming, that's mikarevet kibuyav. Because you're bringing the water to the spark.
As opposed to the spark coming to the water.
Correct. So if the spark comes to the water, or the fire comes to the fire line, the barrels, that's called grama. Mikarevet kibuyav is when you bring the water to the spark. And that's where the problem is. And Tosafot says that Rashi's not dafka. He doesn't really mean it's mechabe. Because if you put the bowl down, that's not called mechabe. Mechabe is when you move the bowl towards the spark. And that's the fear here. The fear here is not when the bowl is there with the water. The fear is that you're going to bring the bowl, and that's going to cause kibuy. And that's what mekarev kibuyav is. And then the Rabbeinu Tam and the Rach have a different gears in their Gemara, and they say mipneishim mekarev kibuy. Instead of kibuyav, they have mekarev kibuy. It does make a difference, even though it's a little nuance. It makes a difference. And the way they explain our Gemara is, the question here is whether there's a barrier between the water and the fire. If there's a barrier between the water and the fire, that's called gram kibuy. If there is no intervening material between the water and the fire, the spark, that's called kibuy, mekarev kibuy. So if you bring the water there, and here in our case, there's no cover to the water, then the water has now been directly exposed to the sparks, and not like what Tosafot was saying before, that you bring the water to the spark, but something having the water there and the sparks going into it, that's called mekarev kibuy. You have now accelerated the extinguishment of an item. On the other hand, by the case of Gram Kibuy, later on in the Masechta, over there, since there's a barrier between the water and the item, you have not been Mekarev Kibuy. You've not accelerated the Kibuy, you've simply now made a Gram Kibuy. You made it possible that it could be extinguished by another action. Therefore, they differentiate, maybe that's the way Rashi is explaining here as well, which is that the problem here is that you've now put water there that will accelerate extinguishment of the sparks that come out, which wouldn't have happened otherwise. And that's called Mekarev Kibuy. On the other hand, Gram Kibuy is where you simply put a material that could in the future cause the extinguishment, but you're not accelerated. Timers. What happens with timers is, there's a basic principle, and this is part of what Machon Somet uses in terms of their principles of how things work, is that Shabbat, you're allowed to maintain the status quo. What you can't do is change the status quo. So for instance, if your light is on, then to leave the light on is not a melacha on Shabbat. Maintain the light in its current status, that is not problematic on Shabbat. Therefore, if you have a timer that's going or set to extinguish the fire, meaning it's going to shut the light off, if you simply move the pins so that the light remains on for a longer period of time, you've done no malach on Shabbat. The malach was to turn the light on or have the light be burning. When you extend that, all you've done is maintain the status quo. That is allowed. The same is true the other way around. If the light is off and it remains in the off position, you've done no malach on Shabbat. So then if the pins are set to turn the light on and all you simply do is extend those pins so that it remains off, maintaining the status quo is allowed on Shabbat. What you may not do on Shabbat is accelerate the other side, which is that if it's on, you can't accelerate it going off. That's our case of Mekarev Kibuyav here. If you move the pins up, so now it's going to go off anyway, but you now make it go off earlier, you've done exactly what is described here. You're Mekarev Kibuy. You've accelerated the extinguishment of the light because you've moved the pin, so now it will go off earlier than it would have otherwise gone off. Yes, it would have been extinguished. But now you've made it extinguish faster than it otherwise would have extinguished. That is not allowed on Shabbat. And the other way is true as well. If the light is off and you move up the pin so it goes on earlier, you've accelerated the havara that's going to take place over here. By accelerating it, you've done something on Shabbat, which is mekarev havara, which is also a problem on Shabbat. The difference will be on Yom Tov. On Yom Tov, where havara is allowed and kibuy is not allowed, you would be allowed to accelerate the havara. You would not be allowed to accelerate the kibuy. But this Gemara place is a very important part of that issue with the timers. That one may not be karev at kibuy. You cannot accelerate the extinguishment. What you can do is allow the extinguishment or extend that which is there. Alright, so now, Gemara, we're going to begin the next parak. The next parak, and now we jump to Hatmana. Now, in terms of Hatmana, we've discussed it already. The problem of Hatmana is that one may not put an item to cook into materials that completely surround it, completely envelop the item. Now, there are two types of materials that you can use. There's a material that's mosif hevel, that adds heat, and then there's a material that is an insulator, which is simply maintains the heat. In terms of mosif hevel, an item that adds heat to it, that's not only asur on Shabbat, it's even asur on Erev Shabbat. We already saw that in the previous perek. Why? Because shema yatmin v'remetz. Because you might do atmana in remetz, meaning in coals, or in something that it still has an embers to it, and you're going to stoke them in order to accelerate the cooking process. And so because of that, anything that's mosif hevel, you may not put the item in hatmana. Something that is not mosif hevel, something an insulator, hatmana can be done on Erev Shabbat, It cannot be done on Shabbat itself. What the Mishnah discusses here is exactly what types of materials are we speaking about. What are those materials? What can you use for Atmana? What cannot use? Entomnim lo bidet gefet. May not use mark or peat, which is basically the residue of fruits or items. Here we're talking about the residue of zeitim, of olive, the leftovers after they're pressed. Velo bezevel, and not whether it's manure or some other waste material. Velo bemelach, not with salt. Velo besid, and not with lime. Velo bechol, and not with sand. Ben lachim, ben yeveshim. Whether they're moist or whether they are dry. Because all of these items are what we call mosif hevel, and they're very hot. They're very hot whether they are moist or dry. On the other hand, one may not use, for atmana, lo beteven, not straw. Lo bezagin, not skins. Velo muchin, not soft material, like Rashi says, it'll be like cotton. Lo basavin, and not any herbage. Bezman shein lachin, when they are moist. Avotomim behem kishin yeveshim. But if they are dry, then they don't have this ability to be mosif hevel. Our Mishnah mentions gefet, but the gefet it's speaking about is the residue of the pressed olives. Aval dushumshamim shapir dami. If it comes to the shumshamim, whether this means sesame seeds or sometimes it means poppy seeds, if that was the case, are they allowed to be used? Odoma, the shumshamim tnan. Or is our Mishnah, when it says gefet over here, it refers to the gefet of the shumshamim or the sesame, the residue of the sesame. V'chol shekein zeitim, and then certainly zeitim would also be included. Tashma, dam Rabbi Zera mishum chad debei Rabbi Yanai, kupa shetaman ba, if you have a basket in which something was placed. Asur la'anich al gefet shel zeitim. One may not place it into the residue of the pressed olives. Shma bizina shel zeitim tonight. It's clear that we were talking about zeitim over here. It says, lo ha'mei melecha l'inyan hatmano adishum shumim nami asur. I would say no, even with sesame seeds, it's also asur. But the inyan asuke havla de zeitim maske havla de shumshim lo maske havla. But when you're talking about extreme heat or the ability to heat through another object, the zeitim can do that, shumshim cannot. Because the case that you brought down is not exactly parallel to the case in the Mishnah. In the case of the Mishnah, you're putting the item itself into the hatmana, the object that you're being matmin in. On the other hand, what you have here, the case that's brought over here by Rabbi Zera, that from Rabbi Yanai is that you have a kupa, you have a kli, and then the kli itself is being put into the materials. So over there, it might be that olive residue is the only thing that is hot enough to make a difference in that case of the atmana. But if you were to put the object directly in, then maybe that would be true even by shumshumin. So you can't prove anything from here, as Rashi says. You first put it into a kupa, you do that atmana in the kupa, and then after that, you're also then putting it into the gefet. Over there, only gefet shel zeitim gives off enough heat to make a difference, to actually affect the item itself. The other hand, shel shumshamim doesn't. But in a scenario where the atmana was done by the shumshamim itself, maybe over there, that would be sufficient and hot enough to be problematic. All right, so that's it. We'll stop here in the Gemara, Tosafot. There's a very, very fundamental Tosafot over here. It's fundamental to atmana and the way that atmana applies today. He says, "Mikan yesh le'asur le'niach kichalim tachad akdera. Afilu yitein aleihem efer, ein latvin kadera aleihem, sheregal chalim malim hevel lemala kamo gefet shel zeitim." Even though you have something in a pot, or inside of a pot, which is the equivalent of our case over here, equivalent of something in a pot, you can't do hatmana in something that is still a lit, something that is still giving off heat in an active way. Because that's what our Gemara just showed us over here. When it shows over here that you're right, hatmana has to be direct. If it's not direct, then we don't worry about hatmana. But the Gemara does say if it's so hot that it affects it even when it's a double layer of hatmana, then it's problematic, like the gefet shel zeitim. So that would be the equivalent of a pot that's put into coals, because the pot is the first level of hatmana, and then the coals is the second level of hatmana. But because the coals are so hot, and they can heat the pot as well, that's a problem of hatmana, even though there's an intervening layer. So Tosafot says that's applicable to us. But then, he asks, how do we do hatmana in our kirot? Because even though we sweep it out, and we do, you know, giruf, fikitum, we do everything that's supposed to be done, nevertheless, it's mosif hevel. It still increases the heat. The heat level is still very high, and increases the heat in the item that's placed in there. So, wait a minute, how do we put our pots into the kira going into Shabbat? We're matmin them in there, and something that's mosif hevel. And Tosafot is a classic Tosafot. He says, that's what we do. That's the minog. Right? If it was a Sfardi posek, he would say that they're wrong. That's it. The halacha is this way, they're wrong. The Balei Tosafot, they're very sensitive to the minog. And since that's the minhag, they have to find a justification for the minhag. So then, v'omeri, yesh liten tam l'kayim ha-minhag. We gotta solve this. So now, the gabi gefet ikal ha-mecha shema yatmin kula b'tocha, aval b'kirot shalano lo sheach ha-mecha shalchi. Number one is, by gefet, we can worry about the fact that you will totally submerge it in the gefet. That's not true by our kirot, our stoves, our tops here. You can never get the entire kli inside. That's number one. Vod. Some people make their kirah by digging a pit in the ground, putting bricks around it, and then they heat it up and stick it in there. But that's not really like hatmana. Why is it not? Right. So why is it not like hatmana? Because he says there's airspace there. Hatmana, Tosfot defines over here, and this is what's very important. Hatmana is only when the object that you're being matmin is directly surrounds it.
It's completely buried.
Right. It's buried in it, and it surrounds it completely. But if there's airspace in between, that may not be called hatmana anymore. If there's intervening air, that's not called hatmana because it doesn't have the impact that we're talking about here. Because what's the impact? We're looking for shema yachte et ha-gichalim, or shema yachte et ha-remetz. That's the whole fear over here. When it's not completely around the item, that's not going to create that problem. And therefore, when there's airspace there, you don't have the problem of hatmana anymore. So leaving, for instance, going into Shabbat, you shut off the oven, and you leave items in the oven after they're shut off, that's not called hatmana, because the oven has airspace in there. That's not called hatmana anymore. Any airspace would get you out of the problem of hatmana. The other thing, the other suggestion, the other answer that's brought here is that the fact that a stove is mostly hevel is not really true. Because when you're talking about items like gefet or coals, they accelerate the heat, and they continue to heat on a continuous basis and make things hotter. But the oven, by definition, the heat is going to dissipate. So even though it's mostly hevel, it still will ming mekarer. For the moment you take the coals out, the oven is on a process of decelerating, cooling down. And therefore, it's not called mostly hevel. Mostly hevel is something that maintains a heat level and can then heat something to the point it'll maintain or even increase the heat for it. Not something where there's a cooling process that's going on, and by definition it cannot continue to heat the item, it will cool automatically. That's not called hatmana. And that brings Tosafot, the bottom Tosafot on the bottom of the Amud Bet, says the fundamental difference between hatmana and Shia. He says here that when it comes to Shia, we said before, that you can leave something on the fire going into Shabbat, if it's fully cooked, or it's chaito. It's something raw, completely raw. It's completely raw, you'll have to do it because the person is mesiach dat. He's not assuming it's going to be done for tonight. It won't be done until tomorrow, so he lets it go. He's not going to stoke the fire. Is that also true by hatmana? If you put a raw piece of meat into something and then you do hatmana, we don't worry about it because it's the same fear. Shema yechate et haremetz. The Rabbeinu Tam over here distinguishes between them. It says that there's a big difference and therefore the lacha will be different. By shia, there is, if you stoke it, it can heat it up, it can cook it a little bit. But you're not going to get a lot of value out of stoking it. Therefore, you put something raw in there, it doesn't pay to stoke it because you have to wait a long time anyway for it to cook. By hatmana, by the nature of hatmana, that will accelerate or exaggerates any action that you take. Because it's mutman, therefore if you stoke the fire, that'll have a greater impact on the item because the little stoking will have a lot of effect in the thing that is now insulated and covered. That heating will do a lot of work, a lot of cooking. And therefore the problem exists in atmana, that even if you have a raw item there, that's not enough to get you out of the problem of atmana. Hatmana does not have that dispensation of derechaito. If something raw that's in there, or if something is past the point where you would think about cooking it, that does not get the dispensation that is by shiya, because the cooking is accelerated, is done in a way that actually will exaggerate any action that you take, and therefore does not allow you to do that going in with hatmana. Only with shiya do you have that dispensation, not with hatmana. Stop here.